meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Yeah, we just blow right into
the studio.
Into the studio.
Right, very slowly.
Slowly, yeah. It's a slow Monday. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, Father.
Welcome, everybody. So we've had a nice weekend? I guess it was.
The weather was nice.
Well, yes.
Saturday, at least.
Yeah, so I didn't get out yesterday for some reason.
Uh-oh. It's cooler yesterday.
Did I go? No, I did not. No, because I after the Mass. Anyway.
You were busy.
Not important. Every day's a busy day, but that's uniquely busy because
yes.
it's one Mass Sunday after another. Yeah. Anyway, how are you doing?
Very good, very good.
Very good. I'm happy. Why are you very good today?
Because God keeps talking to me.
Good.
He keeps settling me down. Yes.
Good. You open the door of your heart.
So that I'm not inflicting myself on other people.
Yeah.
Please.
Which is a good thing, I think, you know? For me, for anybody.
For everybody.
You hear Tony?
Tony's gone today, so.
He's not here.
I don't know where he is, but he's.
The winds blew him somewhere else.
Somewhere. Christina, how are you? How was your weekend?
It was great. It was a beautiful weekend. It's nice to be, I'm a home person.
Yeah.
It's nice to be home to do the regular things.
Sure.
You know, the cleaning and that, so.
In solitude, nobody bothering
yes,
you.
Yes, and I did. Spend most of my weekend in solitude, just by myself at
good.
Home.
So that's good.
I thank God for those moments.
Yes.
And we wish happy birthday to Regina Skupski.
Regina, yes, she was there yesterday.
Yes.
Finally, after I called her Virginia. Did I call? I think I called her on the radio. I called her Virginia.
Yeah, but not at church.
Not at church, no. But it was her birthday. She's the punch key lady and the egg lady, too. You know,
yes. Oh, yes.
They
yes.
bring the eggs, fresh eggs, right from the farm.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, her daughter has a... Chickens.
Oh,
there you go.
See? Regina.
Seems to me there's somebody else's birthday, too.
Washington.
Not really.
No.
No.
Oh.
Not really, because I heard that his birthday is actually February 11th.
My goodness.
Because what was it?
Because his President's Day.
Because he wasn't born in the United States, was he?
I believe he was.
Was he?
He had to be a president. Mm-hmm. You have to be native of the the
well,
country.
Maybe I dreamt this. I don't know. I thought he was, when he was born, there was the Julian calendar or something, and Great Britain used the Julian calendar.
Oh, really?
And his birthday was, anyway, it's not even important. Because today would be his birthday, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It was one of the two February days that I always look forward to. The 12th and the 22nd.
Days off.
Days off, right. It was nice.
Are the
kids are there, but they were, now they combine the two birthdays. Whose birthday was also?
Lincoln.
So the President's Day, they call it.
They combine them. Yeah, I think when I was a kid, too, we had both days off, it seems to me.
Oh, it was great. Yes.
We got gypped.
President days.
We got gypped.
Yeah.
Because in my time, it was just one day.
Yeah, to be so young. Nick, how are you doing today?
Feeling good, actually, because I'm happy I got here early today because I have a few production stuff that I'm going to be helping out with for the show here, so I'm very excited about that.
Very good.
A few minor things to fix, but Never been, as I was telling Jerry and other people, never been more motivated to be here earlier than usual nice. Because good. I was very happy to finally be recording stuff, which I'm very excited about.
Nice. Okay, good.
So I'm in a good mood for that because I'm always excited with production work.
It's always nice when somebody, people are in good mood.
Oh, yes, it helps.
Funny for a Monday, too. Yeah.
Funny for a Monday. Funny. I'm in a Monday slump, I think. You know, it's because it was a busy weekend, I guess that's why. And today's been busy. I hate to bore the people on the listening because it seems like I say that every day, but it's always the mind. You're expending this energy thinking. So we're getting ready. We've got so many things coming up in the parish that we're in this kind of, what would you say, a little bit, is it frenetic? Would you
That's
say frenetic?
That's a good word, yes.
Yeah, trying frenetic. To begin to prepare things and you got to coordinate in your mind how you're going to do this. It's a matter of, what would you call it, choreography. It's like to choreograph, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Choreograph.
Well, you used to be a dancer, didn't you?
Well, I never really was.
I mean, you won a prize.
Yeah, I'm sorry I even mentioned
it. Did you really win?
I did.
Were there any other contestants?
Well, there was just the two of us. Okay. You know? No, there just were other contestants. But we really worked on that. We really, it was a sock hop, you know?
Right.
And
why are they called sock hops?
Because you'd wear socks.
You wore socks. You danced in socks.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, but it was
retro. At that time, it was retro. Because that was something of the 50s, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even after your time.
Right.
Geraldine?
Yes.
Isn't that the sock hops were popular in the 1950s? So
yes,
this was,
they were.
So people didn't wear socks at other events?
No, they would wear them at, they would dance in the socks.
Yeah.
Oh, no shoes?
No shoes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no I always wonder, why is it a sock hop?
Sock hop.
They hopping, whatever.
Anyway, it was kind of, it was retro. It was retro. Going back, because that was the 70s. So I don't know if anybody, well, you don't even know what a sock hop is.
No, that we've had them in the schools, but I don't know where it originated, what was the
whole. Well, yes, Geraldine would be the expert on that, I guess.
I was not a good sock hopper. No.
No.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, why are we talking about dancing? Life is a dance, isn't it?
Yes.
Life is a dance. I don't feel like I don't. To be honest, you know, remember last week I said this is your show.
Yes.
When you were irate and angry and all that.
Yes, oh, how could that be?
You
know, never.
I think I'd like to give the show to you turn it over to you guys today.
Oh, okay.
Nah.
No, I'm really just. I don't want to think. But today is the feast of the chair of Peter.
Right.
The chair of Peter.
Peter.
Which was, we can talk, we can start with that, because I do find it fascinating, you know, mm-hmm. This is the, when I say fascinating, because I think the two of you are with us. We were in Israel.
Yes, we were.
I had taken a group of pilgrims, and I've been there probably about five times I've been to Israel. Mm-hmm. I haven't been there for a number of years now. I'd like to go back, to be honest. And because I like the Holy Land.
Beautiful.
It's very beautiful. But
I would like to go back to
But it was the first time that we, I think the time I was with, when I, the last time I think was when
with
we were all
our
together.
Group. Yeah. Yes. It was a large group too.
And it was the first time though, the first time that we went as a group to Caesarea Philippi.
Right.
Yes.
And I was so impressed because I had never heard this before, you know, about the rock.
Okay.
It really helped. I mean, I talk about putting things in perspective. And so when we speak about, you know, today's a feast of the chair of Peter, it's not physically the chair that we're celebrating, but it's the office of
mm-hmm.
the papacy. Mm-hmm. The chair, the chair of Peter is at St. John Lateran. Mm. But Bernini has the beautiful sculpted, I wanted to look at that. I go to Mass, often I went to Mass at St. Peter's. They have a 5:30 Mass. It's an evening Mass. In the behind the high altar, or the altar of sacrifice, mm-hmm. Which is under the baldacchino
mm-hmm.
of St. Peter, I mean, Bernini's baldacchino.
Yes.
When you watch the any kind of papal Mass on the television, like the Holy Christmas Eve,
mm-hmm.
the Mass is always celebrated under the baldacchino. It's beautiful.
It is.
It's beautiful. But behind that is another chapel or a sanctuary
mm-hmm.
With an altar. And you've seen it. Well, we were all in
we were there.
Europe as well, yes. in Rome. You've all seen it. But the beautiful, this is Bernini's sculpted piece. It's the chair, the chair of Peter. And I can't remember. That's what I wanted to look. And I've, every time I'm there, it's so massive.
Yes.
It's, and it's raised up, you know, mm-hmm. it's high up. But it's so massive. And I'm trying to remember who is holding the chair. Angels, because you've got the other former popes that are sculpted. I mean, just it's just massive. Mm-hmm. It's extremely impressive. But I meant to do that this morning. I haven't had any chance to look at it, and I forgot about it after I thought about it when I was praying the office this morning, praying the office, the Divine mm-hmm. Liturgy in chapel this morning. I was thinking about this beautiful Bernini sculpted chair.
Mm-hmm.
It's just massive. Do you recall it as I'm speaking about it? Do you recall what I'm talking about?
And that's over at St. Peter's.
In St. Mm-hmm. Peter's.
And what you mentioned the chair
is the St. John Lateran.
Okay, because I remember that it's a chair and there's chains. If I'm not mistaken, there's
could be. I'm not. I don't remember.
Trying to remember the chains.
The chains.
Remember when he was? Who was the one that was
in chains?
In
chain,
wasn't it?
Well, they all were
in chain. Right. In prison, you know, when they were prisoners and they were, you know, it was God actually.
St. Peter, yes.
It was St. Peter. So that's
Saint
why
Peter,
the chains.
St. Paul. Was it both of them?
Could be.
I mean, they were all, but it because there's the place where Peter and Paul were both imprisoned in Rome. And there's a church built over that mm-hmm. place in the Forum. But the but the chair, I don't remember if it has chains on it or not.
I remember. But that's what caught my attention, were the chains.
Well, St. John,
massive chains.
It might be there. I think you're thinking of a different place. Maybe it was the other. Maybe it was actually the prison where they were kept.
You know, when you go there, you visit the different churches, the sanctuaries are beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's like there's so many.
There's so much. Yeah.
There's so many
there's so
that
much.
You can't, you know.
There's so much. But the chair, the mm-hmm. chair of Peter, or the chair, well, the chair is at St. John Lateran, because that was the first, the mother church of all churches. That's mm-hmm. where the papacy was until, what was it, the 15th century or something? Mm-hmm. It was moved to the Vatican, to over the Vatican Cemetery. I mean, the church of St. Peter was built going back to, I think, the 4th century, wasn't it? The first church, Basilica, was built mm-hmm. over the tomb of St. Peter. And there's been three, one on top of each other, mm-hmm. you know, over 2,000 years mm-hmm. or nearly 2,000 years, 1,600 years. But built right over but speaking of the altar, the baldacchino and the mm-hmm. altar of sacrifice is absolutely directly above the tomb mm-hmm. of St. Peter.
Right.
But today the church celebrates
the office,
the chair, mm-hmm. they call the Feast of the Chair of St. Peter, mm-hmm. the office of the papacy, where Jesus says, "You are rock, and upon this rock I will build my church." But going back to Caesarea Philippi, we made the trip up there. It's about 30 miles from Capernaum, I think. So we went there as a group of pilgrims, and it was the first time I had been there. And it, as I said, it helped to put everything in perspective, because Jesus, he took, I mean, you're talking about 30 miles. He walked the apostles for a reason. He took them all the way to Caesarea Philippi. So that's the northernmost part of Israel, right on the border of Lebanon, what is today Lebanon. And he took them up there for a reason. And it was there that he, once he got up there, now you got to imagine, and this is the thing that I never heard about this until we went up there.
Mm-hmm.
But in Caesarea Philippi, there's this huge rock wall. It's huge. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yes.
A huge rock wall. And that was, and in that you can still see to this day the niches
mm-hmm.
where they had the images of the gods, the various gods.
Mm-hmm.
And the principal god was the shepherd god, the god Pan, P-A-N, Pan, 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 was called the shepherd god, and he was the, I believe it was the Greek god, but at the time he was the the main god. So Jesus, he consciously, now this is, once he takes them, the apostles, up to Caesarea Philippi to ask a question, and it's from here that he begins then his final descent, or I shouldn't say descent because it's an ascent. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's going to go south, but go up to Jerusalem, because actually you're going up.
You're up, yeah.
But it's going to be his final journey to the holy city. In fact, we'll talk about this as well, but yesterday at the church throughout the world read the Transfiguration. Mm-hmm. So that would have been maybe that's midway between Caesarea Philippi and Jerusalem. That might be the midway point, maybe not quite midway. But Jesus was on his final journey to Jerusalem. And so he took the, before he makes that final journey, he took the apostles up north, 30 miles north, about 30 miles north, to Caesarea Philippi. And there he is. He stands he's with them, and they're standing against this huge rock wall, which is the place of the gods. It's a shrine to the gods. It's a natural rock wall, huge. And there he's going to ask a question of the apostles. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll look at that, and you get a sense of why this was so important, that Jesus would take them up there to Caesarea Philippi and present to them or ask them this question, okay? So we will be right back. Don't go away. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
As a married couple, how would you like to give each other the gift of love itself? Then this is for you.
Hello, I'm Father Thomas J. Loya, and I am inviting husbands and wives to join me and the team at the Tabor Life Institute at St. Nicholas Parish in Munster, Indiana on Saturday, February 27th, and at St. Basil's Parish in Sterling Heights, Michigan on Saturday, April 30th for Embracing the Mystery, a Day of Recollection for Married Couples. Our presentation weds together the sacramental liturgical worldview of Byzantine spirituality and St. John Paul II's theology of the body to rediscover the why of marriage so as to know the how of a happy sacramental marriage. We will also integrate what goes on in church with what should go on in our homes. For information and to register, visit taborlife.org. That's taborlife.org. Or call 708-645-0762. 708-645-0762.
Welcome back.
Welcome back,
everybody. Well, I am in slow motion today, for sure.
That's okay.
So, Christina corrected me.
No,
you're right.
I didn't.
No, that's good, because the original chair is in at St. Peter's in the Vatican. But the chair of St. Peter, the place, what would they call the Pope's church, mm-hmm. is really St. John Lateran, mm-hmm. Because that was the first church. And so there is a chair there, but the original chair mm-hmm. is, maybe that's in the Sistine Chapel.
It's somewhere. I've
seen it, but I don't remember where, mm-hmm. but I don't recall seeing it
in the
Basilica itself.
The Basilica itself.
But it could be.
Somewhere there.
What do I know? But anyway, So Jesus, he took the apostles to Caesarea Philippi, to the northernmost part of Israel, and he stands and there's against the rock of the gods. And it's there that he says, and this is his, he's going to, from there he's beginning his final journey to Jerusalem. And he says, he asked his disciples, he says, who do people say that the Son of Man is? And they replied, some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. And he said to them, but now who do you say that I am? Now you've been with me 3 years already, you know. Who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter said in reply, he says, you are the Christ, you are the Son of the living God. And Jesus said to him in reply, he says, you know, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my heavenly Father. And so I say to you, you are Peter. And upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of the netherworld shall not prevail against it. And I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. So it's significant that Jesus, for a reason, it was very pointed about this, took them up to the rock of the gods in order to basically, you know, point out that this is these are not gods, you know. Mm-hmm. He is God mm-hmm. in the flesh, the second person of the Holy Trinity, three persons in one God, and he is the capstone, as we read in Scripture, you know. But he's going to build, but he says, Simon, Peter, you are Peter, meaning rock, and upon this rock, not on that rock, but on this rock, mm-hmm. Jesus being the capstone, because mm-hmm. he's the Christ, the Messiah, the Savior, and Peter would be, and his successors would be the vicars of Christ. In other words, Jesus has chosen to share his, maybe the word share is not the proper word. Jesus will govern and sanctify mm-hmm. the church, the world, through Peter and his successors, through mere men. And certainly what is given to Peter is given to all the apostles. But Peter is the first of the apostles. Mm-hmm. So he's the point of reference. And the bishops have authority so long as they're in union with Peter, right? So this is so upon this rock, not that rock, mm-hmm. but upon this rock, I will build my church. You are the rock, and upon this rock, I will build the church. And it's interesting because he says, I pray for you, in the singular, he says, I pray for you, Peter, that you in turn strengthen your brothers, because you must know that Satan means to sift you all like wheat. You know? So you, in the singular, you, Peter, strengthen your brothers, the other apostles, because you must know that Satan means to sift you all like wheat. And so this is perpetuated now down through history until Jesus comes at the end of time. And the gates of hell shall not prevail, but the church will be always in conflict, always in battle, mm-hmm. always fighting the good fight, having to weather the storms. There's the image of St. John Bosco. He had a dream, mm-hmm. and in the dream he saw the boat, because the church is often referred to as a boat, right? The boat, and at the helm is Peter, and the successors of Peter, the Pope, and he, St. John Bosco, has this dream or vision of the boat being moving, sailing through really, really turbulent seas, mm-hmm. and it finally comes into a safe harbor. But to the, alongside the boat are he sees these pillars, and at the top of the pillar he sees the Blessed Virgin Mary and the Eucharist. I think it's mm-hmm. the Holy Eucharist, which is Christ, you know, present to us mm-hmm. in this unique way as food for the journey, that we not collapse. Or as, you know, when you think of that image that St. John Bosco had, you can think of the gospel image of the apostles in the boat, and Peter coming, and they're in the sea, and it's a turbulent, the wind is blowing. It's a very violent wind. And we were, I don't know if it was one of the times I was in Israel, we actually got caught in a storm on the Sea of Galilee. And they are vicious. Mm-hmm. They're really vicious. But, and that was during the day, but this was, you know, during the night. And then they saw, then Jesus was coming toward them on the water, walking on the water. And they became even more frightened. And Jesus said, don't, not to be afraid, because it's me, it's I. And Peter said, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come, and I will come. And Jesus says, come, it's my, it's I, these I, come. Mm-hmm. And Peter got out of the boat, and he begins to walk on the water. And he's doing fine until he realizes he feels the weight of the wind, and he's walking on water, and he turns away, and he begins to sink, and he cries out, Lord, save me. And Jesus says, Peter, you know, get up. You man of little faith, you got to keep your eyes on me. But again, this is, he's the Lord is so beautifully forming Peter, you know, through the whole of the gospel, to keep his eyes firmly fixed on the Lord. And even when Jesus, right after being in, as he's asking the question, who do people say that I am? Who do you say that I am? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. I say to you, Simon, you are Peter, which means rock, and upon this rock I will build the church. The gates of hell shall not prevail. I give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. What you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. What you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. And he ordered his disciples to tell no one that he was the Messiah. He's not yet revealed his messianic identity. And from that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem, because now he's going to begin his ascent to Jerusalem, going south, but his ascent to Jerusalem, and suffer greatly from the elders, the chief priests, the scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him and said, God forbid, Lord, no such thing shall ever happen to you. And Jesus turned and said to Peter, he says, get behind me, Satan. You're an obstacle to me. You are thinking not as God does, but as human beings do.
Yeah.
You know, again, is a part of this formation. This is the Lord. And really, the formation, he's in formation, but the transformation in the life of Peter happens only after he's given the gift of the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And then he really does speak with the authority of Christ. I mean, we just see this radical change when you go into the Acts of the Apostles and you see Peter, and he is definitely now speaking with an authority.
Yeah.
With an authority. He's got, it's a powerful a transformation. And he will eventually lay down his life for Jesus, because he said, I'll lay down my life. You know, this won't happen. And Jesus will say eventually, he says, you know, you're going to, you say you're going to defend me, but I tell you, you know, that before the cock crows three times, before the cock crows, you will have denied me, that you will have denied three times that you even know me. And it happens certainly after the Last Supper, after the farewell discourse and the high priestly prayer, when Jesus takes the apostles down to the Garden of Gethsemane, and then he's arrested and taken up back up from the Kidron Valley to the house of Caiaphas, a high priest, and there he's interrogated before being handed over to Pontius Pilate. But it's during the interrogation, Jesus, or Peter rather, is in the courtyard of the house of Caiaphas, and as we read in the gospel, three times he denies that he knows Jesus, because somebody says, you know, you're one of them, you're one of his disciples.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to be incognito, you know, kind of there, and somebody recognizes, no, you were. Everybody knows what's happening, you know, that Jesus had been arrested, and there's this whole drama that's beginning to unfold, and it is quite a drama. It'll bring us to the crucifixion and the death of Jesus. And but in the courtyard on that evening, or that probably, what time would it have been? It's probably beyond midnight already at this point. And once somebody says, you know, he was there by the fire. And somebody says, the woman says, you're one of his disciples. You were with him. I saw you with him. And he says, no, I don't know who you're talking about. And it happened again. Somebody says, but you're one. No, because you even have the accent.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
right.
you're a Galilean. He says, no, I don't know who you're talking about. It happened again. And then he heard the cock crow, mm-hmm. and he realized what he had done. He remembered what Jesus had said, what Jesus said, and he went and he wept. He wept. And I don't know, did he actually see Jesus? Does the gospel actually say during this time he caught his eyes caught the eyes of Jesus? In the movie The Passion of the Christ, it portrays it in such a way, right. I believe.
I don't think it's written that way, but
I don't know. I don't think so, but it's I have to take a look at that, but in any case, it's very it's a very emotional, very sad moment in the life of mm-hmm. Jesus, and it's there after the resurrection that Jesus will ask, you know, three times, Simon, son of John. In fact, he doesn't say Peter, but he says, Simon, son of John, son of Jonah, do you love me? And Peter says, you know, Lord, you know that I love you. And he says, Simon, son of John, or son of Jonah, rather, do you really love me? And he says, Lord, you know that I love you. And then Jesus asks the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you really, really love me? Do you love me more than the rest? Mm-hmm. And Peter became very sad, and he says, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And each time, Jesus says, feed the sheep, tend to the lambs. And it was after the third time, and Peter became sad and said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus says, yes. And he says, you know, when you were young, you went about and you did as you pleased, but now another will strap you against your will and take you where you'd rather not go, to signify that Peter would do what he didn't have the courage to do, because mm-hmm. He hadn't received yet the gift of the Holy Spirit, but that indeed he was destined to lay down his life for the Lord, and indeed he does. And he's crucified as well. Peter is crucified as well, but he's crucified upside down. He has to be crucified upside mm-hmm. down. Mm-hmm. And you know what's interesting is in the tomb of St. Peter, it was in the 1950s, I believe, when Pope Pius XII, they were prepared. He was coming to the end of his life, and it began to, because many of the popes are buried beneath the basilica. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the catacombs of the popes, and there's others down there too, but many, many popes. And again, remember, all this is, the whole basilica is built over the tomb of St. Peter. But it was only, and they knew that, the church always knew that, but they didn't know exactly where the body of St. Peter was. They just knew that the basilica was built over the tomb of St. Peter. And so when they were removing the body of one of the popes, because they do that sometimes, they shift them around, right? Uh-huh. Like John Paul II was... he was in the catacombs, now he's in the basilica. It's very moving to go to his tomb, which is actually in the basilica. And he was in, whose tomb was he in? He might have been in Pope John the 23rd's, who was also moved up to the...
I don't know.
Pope John the 23rd is actually, his body is, you can see it, his body was incorrupt.
Wow.
So you can see it in the glass coffin mm-hmm. there in St. Peter's. He was canonized a saint along with Pope John Paul II, but in any case, one of the popes was removed
or removed
somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But in the as they were preparing this eventual tomb for Pope, I believe it was Pope Pius XII. I don't want to call it excavations. It led to the excavations because they were able to find the lower catacombs, mm-hmm. and so this led to further excavations. And so they went down and they don't even advertise it because it's too cramped and too small. So you can't expect that the pilgrims going to St. Peter's will go down there. But when you know about it, like I took a group of people, or I went with a group of people. There was only a small group, maybe 15 of us. We were able to go down there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get permission to go down there. And they actually found the tomb of St. Peter. And it said, you know, Petrus, mm-hmm. Peter. I think that's all it said. But it was right under the altar of sacrifice. It was directly under mm-hmm. the altar of sacrifice, under the baldacchino of Bernini's baldacchino, but directly under the cupola, no? And it's very impressive, yeah. but they didn't say anything. They had the remains removed mm-hmm. from the tomb and had them studied. What do they call that? They do where they try to determine the age and all this mm-hmm. of the man because they wanted to
Make sure it was
to him. Identify yeah. who this was. And so nothing was said, but they you can probably download it on the on the internet, the yeah. whole story, because I'm not going to do justice to it. But it's very, very interesting. And what they found is the man buried, Peter, had no feet. Mm-hmm. And when he was crucified, he was crucified upside down. They just cut his feet off. They cut him at the feet.
Okay.
You know, and they didn't bury his feet with his body. And so they knew that. The church knew that, you know, because it's not, of course, not written in the scripture because this has all happened after the
yeah.
fact.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not buried. He was buried. His feet, his feet were cut from his body. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes. I'm just trying to picture him being crucifixion was a horrible way to die.
Sure.
But even upside down, that's,
yeah.
I can't even
think about it. You know, so. But and I think I could be mistaken, but I think they estimated the man was about 58 years old,
mm.
and wow. Peter would have been about 58 when he died. I could be mistaken, but I think that's what. But they were able to give the age of the man as well. Mm. So the Peter yes. is actually buried right there. So you can actually, and they put the body back. They put the bones back there. You know, so
yeah.
when you go down there, you can actually see, but it's a very interesting. Mm-hmm. And even in the catacombs, the upper catacombs under the basilica where many of the popes are buried, it's very impressive because you've got all these chapels. And you know what? We got to take a break. We'll come back and I'll talk. Mention a little bit about mm-hmm. that because it really is impressive. I'll tell you why in a moment. So don't go away. We'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Let's Support of Winds of Change in AM 750 WNDZ.
There is a lot going on at St. Stan's. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, where you can obtain a plenary indulgence by visiting us during this year of mercy with the usual qualifications. Then, of course, there is Eucharistic adoration before the iconic monstrance, confessions 4 days per week, and masses in English, Polish, and Spanish. There's much more waiting for you here. St. Stan's is right off the Kennedy Expressway, just 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Find out more by going to ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org and enter into the presence of Christ.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Who am I? What does it mean to love? Why was I created? We'll address all of these great questions and more at Echo Chicago this June. Hello, I'm Dawn Fitzpatrick, Respect Life Director for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Echo Chicago is a Theology of the Body summer camp for teens and young adults. For the first time ever, the Archdiocese is partnering with Dumox Ministries to present a week of prayer, fun, and immersion in the teachings of St. Pope John Paul II. This exciting camp will take place at Benedictine University in Lisle, June 24th to the 30th. Registration is now open. Go to respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355 for more information. That's respectlifechicago.org or call 312-534-5355. All of us feel an echo in our heart to explore God's original creation and his true purpose for us. Join us in June for Echo Chicago.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. So, Christina, you downloaded the...
Images.
So they call it the SCAVI. The SCAVI because tour, excavations of St. Peter.
And they show the bones.
Yeah. Did they say... Can you see what they say about the age?
That's what I'm going to
see if you can
look.
Find that. But I was... So people understand perhaps that, you know, mm-hmm. the Vatican Hill was a cemetery. That's what it was. It was a cemetery. So the Vatican, it was the Vatican Hill. It was a cemetery. And alongside the Vatican Hill going south was Nero's Circus. It was a place for the gladiators and all this. And so that it was there that Peter was crucified. There he was crucified, and then, of course, he was just taken and buried in the Vatican Cemetery.
Right.
And it was above that, above his tomb. And the Christians, early Christians, marked the spot, of course, because he was the head of the church. Now, it's interesting, because Peter was, when he first started, he was from Jerusalem, he went to Antioch, and then from Antioch, he moved to Rome. And why? Because Rome was the center of the empire, mm-hmm. right? And so it would naturally he would establish the church's center. You say, well, why not in Jerusalem? Well, because universal from going mm-hmm. out to all the nations, and this was it would be the a little bit of the controversy. Let's just say because we have here the mitre of Bishop Fulton Sheen and his cause for canonization is being studied, or it's underway and has been for some time. But he was raised in Peoria. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yes.
But his body is in New York City. Mm-hmm. New York City. And so there's been this controversy of whether he should, you know, the church in Peoria wants his body brought back to mm-hmm. Peoria. Now, Bishop Fulton Sheen was who was he, Geraldine? Because that was your time. You remember who he was.
He was one of the most popular people on television.
On television.
Yeah, he really was. And he did a lot to awaken interest in the church.
Right.
Because he knew what he was talking about. And
he's very dynamic.
Oh, very dynamic.
And this was exciting. On primetime, too.
In primetime.
Oh, yes.
Primetime. And it was if not the most popular show, it was one of the most, of course, at that time you only had, a couple of channels you can choose from. But
the main channels.
Right. But his show was number one.
Right.
Number mm-hmm. one. And so he really took the gospel message to the airwaves, mm-hmm. to the airwaves and television and all that. So his body is buried in, in St. Patrick's, okay. in New York City. So the controversy over whether, you know, to bring him to Peoria or whether to keep him in New York, well, it makes sense to keep him in New York because, I mean, right around the corner from New York mm-hmm. is, you've got NBC, you've got Fox News, you've got CNN. All this is within just a short mm-hmm. walking distance from St. Patrick's.
Yeah.
And so being the so immersed in media, even before, I mean, when you think about it, how things have changed.
Oh, yeah.
But it seems really quite fitting, quite appropriate that he would be buried, or that they would just keep his body. His body would stay in New York, mm-hmm. and because that's where people, who's going to go to Peoria? I mean, not no put down to Peoria, but New York City is New York City.
Oh,
yeah, right?
Sure. More people are there.
So and Peter, you know, naturally, but we would say, moved by the grace of God to bring the church, the center, to build the center
right
there in Rome. And so when Peter went to Rome, he lived among the Jews. The oldest, by the way, the oldest Jewish community of Europe was right there in Rome, and in what's now called Trastevere, which is along the Tiber River. And it was there that he lived, you know, among the Jews, because he was Jewish, mm-hmm. right? And there's various churches, the Church of St. Priscilla, the Church of St. Presadia. These were, I think, the two sisters who were both martyred. Mm-hmm. Their churches were built, well, the one church was built, I think, over the home of St. Priscilla. They're written in the Acts mm-hmm. of the Apostles. And they claim to have the table, one of the tables where he had eaten or even perhaps celebrated the Mass,
yeah.
you know. So when I stay in Rome, I'm not too far from there. Actually, it's very close to St. Mary Major. So that was a very old, and not far from St. John Lateran as well. So St. John Lateran, St. Mary Major. There's four major basilicas: St. Peter, St. Mary Major, St. Paul outside the wall, and St. John Lateran. So in any case, but the he set up everything in Rome. So what I wanted to say was, it's very impressive, you know, to go in the morning. And I mean, this is when they have the masses in the catacombs, and a lot of the pilgrims, there's masses in a few other places in the basilica itself during the day. I've noticed that. I was with a group from Chicago one year. They were the pilgrims going to see the Holy Father in Madrid, and they went first to Rome and then from there to Madrid. It was
a high school students? No, that's
yes,
another group.
It was young people, but they were from the suburbs of Chicago.
St. Christina's? No. That was one.
No, it wasn't. They were Indian. They were Indians. I mean, Indian, from India.
Uh-huh.
But they were from a community
here
in the Chicagoland area. And I remember being with them because I saw the Mass was starting, so I joined them for the Mass. And I believe it was in a different language, in a different dialect. It must have been, because it was at the sign of peace that the people around me said, "Peace be with you," in English. And, you know, you kind of know that they're from Chicago.
The accent.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
It was amazing. I said, "Where are you from?" They said, from Chicago. I said, "So am I." You know, so it was, I don't even think I've got a Chicago accent, but I went to confession. I always go to confession at St. Peter's when I go. And one of the priests asked me if I was from Chicago. And I said, "Yes, I'm from Chicago." Or I live in Chicago. I've been in Chicago so many years. He says, "I could tell by the way you..." And I didn't consider myself as speaking like a Chicagoan.
Chicago. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's interesting. But in the lower part of the church, the basilica, the catacombs, they've got all these chapels. They've got chapels, so many, in all the different places where the popes are buried. And I've had Mass down there many times. And the most moving time, most moving Mass I had, I would say, was when my family came. I had some of my brother and sisters and some nieces came to Rome when I was in sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, it was after the sabbatical. We went...
That was on a family trip you took.
Exactly. Yes. And I took them. So we had the Mass in the morning. So about 7 o'clock is when the Masses, people, the different pilgrims, the different groups from all over, they go. And it's so... You go into the Vatican, it's so quiet, because any other time it's, you know, except also in the evening, you know, around 5, when you have the evening Mass, it's quiet as well, usually. Except perhaps in the high holy, you know, during the high seasons, like Easter and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But you go in there, and there's somebody that will take you to the chapel. You're assigned to a chapel, and then of course the priests, they disappear into the sacristy, and you know you're vested, and you've got an altar boy who carries who leads you then down into the catacombs, into the chapel, and it. What's so moving about it is that as you're celebrating the Mass, and these are all, Mass is being celebrated at the same time in all these little chapels, and so you can hear the prayers in all the different languages, and the hymns that are being sung in the different languages, and it is just a very moving experience, because it's so quiet. Mm-hmm. It's so quiet. There isn't, the pilgrims haven't come, you know, the tourism hasn't started, you know, everybody. It's just prayer. It's all prayer. The Mass being celebrated. It is a very, very moving experience. And I did have once Mass at the tomb of St. Peter, but not in the Scavi. But it was, again, where they, under the altar of sacrifice, you know, because when you go into the Vatican, you go to the altar, to the Baldacchino, Bernini's the altar sacrifice at the center of the basilica, and it's surrounded by at the front there's candles, vigil lights burning all the time, and you can go there and then you can look down into the place where the tomb is, where it was always believed to be. Of course, he's buried farther down, but you're looking down, and down there is also a chapel, and so I had the privilege, really, the great blessing to have a Mass there at the tomb of St. Peter. That was with, this was with a group from St. Hyacinth. Mm-hmm. And it was really impressive. But it's just a very, very moving experience. And you just have that great sense of the universality mm-hmm. of the church.
Or even when we went to the Holy, and you were there, Jerry, mm-hmm. when you had the Mass also in one of the catacombs, the lower part, and it was right. in mm-hmm. the Holy Land. Remember that,
which
too.
What catacomb?
It was one of
we
the...
We had Masses.
Masses, but I remember it was down there because even the floor was like...
Was that at remember. The... excuse me, in Nazareth?
Could have been.
We
were down there.
I think.
And there's there were other, like you mentioned, there were other Masses going on and right. the other.
Yeah, I got to remember where that was. That
you
wasn't
could hear
Nazareth.
The singing, yeah.
Mm-mm. Yeah, but it is. It's a
somewhere,
very moving experience.
Is, yeah.
Very, very. We're going to take a final break and then we'll be right back. And Father Anthony, you're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change in AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that Masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Newsflash! This just in, Winds of Change podcast can now be heard on your iPhone and Android phone. Download the TuneIn Radio app and search Winds of Change, and Winds of Change will be right there for your very ears. We now return you to Winds of Change.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us on this, the Feast of the Chair of Peter, the office of the papacy. So Christina was doing her own little excavations, going down yes. into the Scavi. The Scavi, that's what they call it in Rome, the Scavi. And so Peter was...
About 64.
I was mistaken, 64.
But it was around, yeah.
Which means that he would have been about the age of Jesus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he died... It says there are 33, 34 years after Christ.
After Christ. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting when you think about it, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Wow. The history, you know. It's funny. The other day I was thinking, you know, I feel very bad for the people of St. Adalbert's here in Chicago because the church is closing and there's a lot of grieving going on. And I was speaking to somebody the other day who... was a member of St. Boniface.
Oh.
Patty, very nice people. She and her brother and her sister, and very involved in the Legionnaire Church of Mary. But she was in my office the other morning, and she was just talking about St. Boniface, which is just down the street from St. Stan's. I actually got St. Stan's, Holy Trinity, and then St. Boniface mm-hmm. Right off Noble. What's on Noble Street? And,
yes, Noble and Augusta.
Not quite Augusta, I think. Is it Augusta or Walton or something?
No, Walton.
Yeah, I kept thinking Augusta Walton, as well. Yeah. But she was after how many years? Because this happened in...
The 80s.
1980s. And mm-hmm. she, you could, in, she was speaking about the church. It was everything to her, you know. Her whole family and baptized, her presentation, her the sacraments, mm-hmm. Many of her family members worked in the church. Her sister was a secretary, actually. I think she said, and she, I think she was helped with the cooking and all that. But you could just feel the pain, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's but again, and now the people from St. Adalbert's. Oh, and she was showing me pictures. You know, I guess eventually they're going to tear it down, or there's a. The facade, mm-hmm. the front facade mm-hmm. of the church it might be the a part of condominiums, you know, that they want to build in this place. But it's just, it's very, very jarring.
Yeah.
And she has pictures of the inside, the graffiti and all that over the years. And the crucifix is still there and the altar, and she would like to get the crucifix out of the church. But it's, I'm surprised they didn't take it out. You know? But the graffiti, there's graffiti everywhere. You know, people, now you can't, it's all blocked off. And it always has been, but people would find a way to get in there. And it's just very sad. But the church is more than the building. So the, even as we celebrate the chair of Peter, it's not physically the chair, but it is the office of the papacy. And what a gift to the church. It's what keeps us united. And what keeps the faith, I mean, the churches, unfortunately, the churches divided. I didn't get a chance to get into it today, maybe tomorrow, because we had the transfiguration yesterday, and I was thinking about the Pope and the Patriarch, when Pope Francis met the Patriarch, a Russian Patriarch in Cuba, and it's been the desire, a yearning desire on the part of Pope John, well, certainly for so many years, but the separation between East and West happened about 1,000 years ago, and a lot of it was very political. But so you've got the Eastern Church, you know, really broken off into these various nation, Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, Syrian Orthodox, various churches, but they are, there's a bond that they share with, and these would be churches with a big C, you know, mother churches, but this desire that the two would reunite, you know, so the church would be, again, one, rather than have to live with the scandal of this of this division. But the, why did I bring it up? Pope John Paul II would speak about the church breathing with both lungs, you know, that without both lungs, we're a little bit crippled. And, in fact, we'll maybe try to pick up on this tomorrow, but because I, when I was reading the Transfiguration, I thought, "Wow, there it is, right there." Because the West, the Latin Church, that would be the Roman Catholic, the Latin Church, not just the Roman Catholic, but it would also be like the Father Loya, Byzantine churches, and all that are part of the Latin Rite, what we call the Latin Rite, or the Church of the West, and then you've got the Orthodox, the Church of the East, the Oriental Church, and the Western Church. That, well, I tell you what, we're out of time, so I'm going to try to remember to bring this up, but what did he mean by the church breathing with both lungs? It really kind of clicked for me in a very powerful way as I was reading, reflecting on the Transfiguration and reading a little bit of Catherine de Hooch Doherty, her writings, she comes out of Russia. So we'll try to remember to pick up on that tomorrow because it really is quite important. It's about being open to the Spirit of God. Okay, everybody, thanks so much for being with us on this seemingly slow Monday, at least. I feel like I'm in slow motion. But thanks for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow, God willing. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Ciao.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. To say when right from wrong has become so obscure, it does not take that long. Can you see?